The best analogy to this kind of epidemic is the outbreak of food poisoning that swept through several public schools in Belgium in the summer of 1999. It started when 42 children in the Belgian town of Bornem became mysteriously ill after drinking Coca-Cola and had to be hospitalized. 2 days later, 8 more school children fell sick in Brugge, followed by 13 in Harelbeke the next day and 42 in Lochristi 3 days after that, and on in a widening spiral that, in the end, sent more than 100 children to the hospital complaining of nausea, dizziness, and headaches, and forced Coca-Cola into the largest product recall in its 113-year history. Upon investigation, an apparent culprit was found. In the Coca-Cola plant in Antwerp, contaminated carbon dioxide had been used to carbonate a batch of the soda's famous syrup. But then the case got tricky. Upon examination, the contaminants in the carbon dioxide were found to be sulfur compounds present at between 5 and 17 parts per billion. These sulfides can cause illness, however, only at levels about 1,000 times greater than that. At 17 parts per billion, they simply impart a bad smell, like rotten eggs, which means that Belgium should have experienced nothing more than a minor epidemic of nose wrinkling. More puzzling is the fact that in 4 of the 5 schools where the bad Coke allegedly caused illness, half the kids who got sick hadn't actually drunk any Coke that day. Whatever went on in Belgium, in other words, probably wasn't Coca-Cola poisoning. So what was it? It was a kind of mass hysteria, a phenomenon that is not at all uncommon among schoolchildren. Simon Wesley, a psychiatrist at King's College of Medicine in London, has been collecting reports of this kind of hysteria for about 10 years, and now has hundreds of examples dating back as far as 1787, when mill workers in Lancashire suddenly took ill after they became persuaded that they were being poisoned by tainted cotton. According to Wesley, almost all cases fit a pattern. Someone sees a neighbor fall ill and becomes convinced that he is being contaminated by some unseen evil. In the past, it was demons and spirits. Nowadays, it tends to be toxins and gases, and his fear makes him anxious. His anxiety makes him dizzy and nauseated. He begins to hyperventilate. He collapses. Other people hear the same allegation, see the victim faint, and they begin to get anxious themselves. They feel nauseated. They hyperventilate. They collapse. And before you know it, everyone in the room is hyperventilating and collapsing. These symptoms, Wesley stresses, are perfectly genuine. It's just that they are manifestations of a threat that is wholly imagined. This kind of thing is extremely common, he says, and it's almost normal. It doesn't mean that you are mentally ill or crazy. What happened in Belgium was a fairly typical example of a more standard form of contagious anxiety, possibly heightened by the recent Belgian scare over dioxin-contaminated animal feed. The students' alarm over the rotten egg odor of their Cokes, for example, is straight out of the hysteria textbooks. The vast majority of these events are triggered by some abnormal but benign smell, Wesley said. Something strange, like a weird odor coming from the air conditioning. The fact that the outbreaks occurred in schools is also typical of hysteria cases. The classic ones always involve schoolchildren, Wesley continued. There's a famous British case involving hundreds of schoolgirls who collapsed during a 1980 Nottinghamshire jazz festival. They blamed it on a local farmer spraying pesticides. There have been more than 115 documented hysteria cases in schools over the past 300 years. Is it a mistake to take the hysterical outbreaks, like the Belgian Coke scare, too seriously? Not at all. It was, in part, a symptom of deeper underlying anxieties. What's more, the children who felt sick were not faking their symptoms. They were sick. It's just that it's important to realize that sometimes epidemic behavior among children does not have an identifiable and rational cause. The kids get sick because other kids got sick. The post-Columbine outbreak of school shootings is, in this sense, no different. It is happening because Columbine happened, and because ritualized dramatic self-destructive behavior among teenagers, whether it involves suicide, smoking, taking a gun to school, or fainting after drinking a harmless can of Coke, has extraordinary contagious power. My sense is that the way adolescent society has evolved in recent years has increased the potential for this kind of isolation. We have given teens more money so they can construct their own social and material worlds more easily. We have given them more time to spend among themselves and less time in the company of adults. We have given them email and beepers and, most of all, cellular phones so that they can fill in all the dead spots in their day, dead spots that might once have been filled with the voices of adults, with the voices of their peers. That is a world ruled by the logic of word of mouth, by the contagious messages that teens pass among themselves. Columbine is now the most prominent epidemic of isolation among teenagers. It will not be the last.